Doordom may help you through the winter blahs. This is the focus group.
They're all business, except when they're not. It's the focus group with Tim Bennett and John Nash.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the focus group. Tim Bennett here with my good friend and co-host, Mr. John T. Nash. We are the focus group, soon to be in our 17th year as we head to March in this year of 2025. I said doordom. I don't know if that came across because it's a new word, I think, or a made-up word.
I think it's there's a word that I like called a portmanteau, which means it's a made-up word, like two words combined. So that's combined. A portmanteau,
so
right?
It's a portmanteau, so we're going to discuss that at the end
John
of our... John speaks French. Where is that? We got to find that.
I got to find it. Remember, it was like, bonjour.
Learn French with John. So doordom is something we're going to speak about in our Shop Talk segment, which is at the end of the show. But for those of you that are new or may have found us recently, how the focus group works is we catch up to some banter, as John says, some nonsense and chatter. And then we do stories that caught our eye for the week. And it could be about anything. Then we do a business birthday, talk about some of our partners, including Deep Discount, and then do a Shop Talk segment, which is usually geared around business, career, or some pop culture reference. So
lifestyle improvement.
We'll have to run it through AI and see what it says.
Yeah, Tim, apparently AI is coming for all our jobs. Better get on the bandwagon, right?
Yes, you better do that. This doordom thing that we're going to talk about is kind of the blahs of winter, but so far you said you're having a good winter, you think?
I am pushing again. Yes, I am. And for weird little reasons, I do a lot of cycling, and in the winter I'm stuck doing indoor training. If anybody cycles, right. You know what I'm talking about. And many years ago, I used to train on something called rollers. So the bike goes up on these rollers, and you pedal and you don't go anywhere, obviously, but it's all about teaching you balance and cadence. And it does take a while to get used to using these things, and you can fall off. If you fall off, you go left or right. You don't go forward, even though you're pedaling. So that could be a possible hip problem. But I have a setup upstate that I use at the house. So I set up the rollers on the back porch. Doesn't matter what the temperature is. Put the bike on it, and I ride for 40 or 50 minutes listening to music. It's very meditative, and I'm outside, even though I'm on the porch. but the wind's blowing. I can see the snow, the whole bit. And I find that to be, for the last couple of years in the winter, I would get in the car and drive to one of the rail trails around our house and do like a 2 or 4 mile walk. I find this to be actually even better for me than doing that. Like, I love walking, but there's something about those rollers or doing bike stuff. Yeah.
It's torture, John. I wonder when the day's going to happen where you just say, that's enough.
I
had that day with rowing.
Really?
But part of it was just physically because I couldn't get out of the boat with my knee. But I remember just saying that this will be the last time I row in a boat like this.
Well,
it was very competitive.
I was going to say, you raced. Yeah.
So, and I just remember saying that this is the last I'll ever do this. So, there'll be a time where you might just say, eh.
I'm getting that way with weight training, actually.
Maybe you'll play golf.
No. I learned in college, and there was a day that we got taken to a golf course, and the guys that I were playing with, they broke out a joint. And I'm like, oh no, we have to be in perfect. No, you're gonna see. So we got stoned. It was the best golf game I ever played, and the only time I ever actually played successfully. And I was used as the guy that the coach would film on a video camera, and put it up on a screen inside the gym and say, here's how not to play golf. This guy.
I thought you were gonna say you had perfect form.
No, he's like, he goes, did you play baseball as a kid? I said, yeah, I was in Little League. Well, there you go. You're swinging that damn club like it's a baseball bat. That's not the part. Yeah.
That a hockey stick, right? No, you know, I tried the hardest because particularly in business and, you know, agency, a lot of work gets done on the golf course, supposedly.
It does, yeah.
But I just was frustrated with it because I think it took too much time. And then it's frustrating because at any given day you could be great at it, and then the next day you'd be horrible, which is why people love it so, I guess. But Maybe as we get older, John, we'll change our minds. We'll see.
No, no. When I look forward to not working someday, I'm thinking about doing things that I did in the past that I just don't have to care about now. So I can go back to do my animation work because I'm not going to be employed doing animation, meaning I'm just having, it's a hobby. Have fun with right. it. Like, I'd love to do drawing and painting and revisit that without the need to, you know, Tim and I think, Tim, you might have been raised with a similar thought process, but my parents were pretty, they were pretty straightforward. Like, if you're going to do something and spend your time doing it, you know, you better get paid for it. Were you like, would you come from a household like that?
Yeah, or there wasn't time for a lot of recreation. Yeah. And my dad was, as your dad worked too, my dad was a hard worker. He worked weekends. And my mom said later on, my mom shared this with me recently. She said that my dad regretted a little bit that he wasn't around on Saturdays or some, because he would do odd jobs in the evening sometimes too. But as a little kid, I didn't feel slighted. But I think he kind of did, or he regretted that he wasn't around a lot. But my father would, on Saturdays, he did a lot of tree work. So he would cut down trees and did a lot of work
like
that. By
the way, that's a whole thing. Like, you have to know. He probably had a couple little different size chainsaws, too.
Oh, he had lots of chainsaws. We had a wood chipper. He had the spikes. He'd climb the trees. There's pictures of him. We could barely see him up in the tree, cutting the trees down. He was quite good at it. He had his own business for a while, but his business partner was a screw-off, and so my mother cut it. She's like, that's it. No more money's going out. So she made him go get another job and get out of his own. I often wonder, because I think had he stayed in his own business, he would have done quite well. But his business partner was as lazy as can be. Mm-hmm. And my mother's like, I'm tired of sending checks, you know, giving him checks each week for doing nothing. So that's typical of my mom. So, hey, listen, I watched one of the Oscar films over the weekend. Have you watched anything?
I'm watching, I have Anora that I want to watch. It's about a woman who falls in love with this young guy. They get married. He's like some Russian, the kid of a Russian oligarch, and things happen from
there.
What's
it called? Anora?
Anora. Yeah. A-N-O-R-A. And, other than that, I haven't seen many of the Oscar films. What one did you watch?
Well, I almost shut it off. So I started watching it because a good friend of ours, Lisa, suggested it and said how wonderful it was and should win every award at the Academy Awards, the Oscars. Emilia Perez.
I was literally looking at that just last night. Like,
I think it got 13 or 12, yep, 12 or 13 nods. Different. Wow. Which she failed to tell me.
Subtitle?
Yeah. Which, you know, I hate to read a movie.
You hate reading movies.
So it comes on, both Richard and I are like, I'm going to kill her. And I said, well, let's give it a little time. And so not only is it subtitled, but it goes from Spanish to French to English to Spanish. But what was funny about it is the English subtitles were simple, which, you know, sometimes they're, you know, there's lots of copies. So they'd be, you know, going on, yo no tengo queso, te quiero sentar al lenzo. And they'd be like, no. So.
You think you're missing some kind of nuance because of right. how simple the.
So I thought it was hilarious that I thought the translation was, because I know a little bit of Spanish, and I'd be like, well, okay, it's close. But it actually was a good movie. But I, you know, full of holes. I mean, there are people that have said that, the people that have been critical of it. But, and it's a musical too, which I didn't know. I'm really building it up. But, did you know it was a musical?
No, I did not. Now you've added that to the retinue. Yeah.
It's, I'll be curious to see what you think. I ended up, when it was over, I ended up enjoying it. Although I thought some of it moved a little, you know, a lot of times I'm critical of movies that drag. This, you had to actually really pay attention because it moved quick. So, in that regard, I was happy with it. So worth a look. I'll be curious to see if it does as well as everyone thinks.
All right. So on the films that have been nominated, for example, right. like I've watched an animated film called Flow. Which I thought was gorgeous. It's about four animals that there's no dialogue. There's just music.
It's animation.
it's animation. It's called Flow. And these four animals sort of survive this flood and they float around in a boat together and do things, but they don't talk. I mean, they're just animals and they act like animals. And I thought they did a brilliant job with that. There's a movie I have that I want to watch that I bought actually called The Wild Robot. I think we talked about it on the show one day. That's I have to see. Then there's another one that I was thinking of as well called Memoir of a Snail. It's a feature film. It's a stop motion thing. So I sort of focus on those. But then the actual best films and stuff. So best feature film nominees. Do you like so The Substance? Here's Emilia Perez, right? Anora right. is one of them. The Brutalist, which is about an architect. A Complete Unknown, Emilia Perez, and The Substance, which we profiled the previous week on the Deep Discount.
That was the one with Demi Moore, right?
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of good things about it. So I'm going to watch Anora this week. I do I want to watch Emilia Perez? I guess I do, right?
You know, it was, I will say this about it. It was so different that I think that's probably why it got so much attention.
Really?
Yeah. And I think that's what, I think that was one of the things that kept me watching it, was not like something we've seen recently. So in that regard, you know, the different languages, it's not a musical in the sense of let's sing and dance musical.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. Almost, there were little bits, almost, Richard and I both thought, almost a little bit of a hint of Evita. But that might just be the Spanish culture of it. But it was certainly, it. Hey, listen, I didn't turn it off, and I've turned off a lot lately, so.
Yes, you have. Yeah. you have walked away from a lot of, yeah. Actually, there's a whole bunch of, so the best picture is more than I was.
There's a lot of them, aren't there? I was shocked.
Yeah, I was reading to you from, I think, might have been the best original score. So best picture is Anora, The Brutalist, A Complete Unknown, Conclave. That's the movie about Rome. Doom Part 2, which is beautiful. Emilia Perez, I'm Still Here, Nickel Boys, The Substance, and Wicked. I read the book, The Nickel Boys. It would make a great movie, I think. I think I'll see Emilia Perez based on what you said. I saw Dune 2. I loved it.
A lot of hype around Wicked, right? All summer. Wicked, Wicked, Wicked.
Can I tell you, I never saw the show on Broadway. I read the book. And by the way, the book Wicked is not really like the show or the movie. It's kind of a dark tale. I just don't... I don't have an interest in it. Right?
Did you watch Barbie last year?
Yes. Okay, and Barbie is a movie that I think you need to watch twice.
It was also different, very different.
The second time we saw it, Bob and I were like, wow, this is, I can see why there was a lot of hype around it.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. So without further ado, Mr. Nash, what caught your eye this week?
What caught your eye? Here's what Tim and John found.
What caught my eye this week comes to us from our listener, Chris. And Chris has been a listener of the show for quite a long time. And he also is an incredible movie file. Whenever we do the Pick That Flick game, and we are in the Criterion movie giveaway month, he nails almost. He always wins. He almost gets like a perfect score. But he sent me this article from an Australian newspaper, and I think you'll love this. It's about a guy who refuses to sell his home, and they build a highway around it. Okay, so when Chris sent this to me, I was like, this is brilliant. Headline reads, Defiant homeowner admits regret after refusing to move for a new highway. So a gentleman in China named Huang Ping wouldn't leave his home after even being offered a sizable compensation package and a choice of where to move. So the local government or the Chinese government offered him $350,000 and a choice of three different properties to accept to move into so they could build this new highway. He fought and fought and didn't accept anything. And finally, they're like, okay, that was our best offer. Construction began. And now, if you happen to be watching on the YouTube channel, if you saw his house from the air, it resembles an eyeball. And the eyeball part, the center circle, is where his house is. And the stuff that goes around it is the highway. So He said that it says here, the stubborn homeowner was involved in a long period of negotiations with the Jinxie County Party Committee, but these ended up being pointless. A fence runs along the outside of the construction, which does shield the home from debris, but dust continues to fill the air around the site. I mean, okay, it's an active, massive construction zone. The house has fascinated locals and is now flooded with visitors taking pictures of the odd addition. The home is located in I think that's how you pronounce the X, right? Southwest of Shanghai, and is shared by Huang and his grandson. He says, now, if I could turn back time, I would agree to the demolition conditions they offered. Well, right?
This to me is very un-Chinese, isn't it? Usually I just thought they just said tough. Done. They'll wipe out a city of 3 million to do a
public works thing. The highway's open, scheduled to open in spring, and once it opens, he's going to have traffic going by him all the time, and that little house is sitting there. What an unusual thing, right?
I wonder where he parks his car.
Okay, so there's a video that is like a TikTok that is associated with this photo, and the person who shot the video walks around the fence and the house, if you happen to be watching on YouTube. So there's this, you go under like a bridge and then out to the left or right. There's like a road that
I see that road over there. Yeah. So I guess that's how he gets in and out.
Uh-huh.
It is kind of funny, but...
What kind of a life would this be?
Horrible. Can you imagine the noise?
So just all day long you have this noise, right? And the highway, they built the highway almost to the level of the roof of the house. So he's like in this well. It's like a well. Yeah. That's what it looks like, right?
And again, can gets thrown out. That shit getting thrown out of the people's windows.
Mm-hmm.
Toss it.
And then here comes...
He won't last there long, do you think?
Well, here's the last part. Let's say he passes away someday, as we all have to. His grandson, who lives with him, inherits the property. How are you going to sell this thing? Who's the buyer? What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, I don't know. Unless you're a company and you want to do advertising, I guess maybe you can.
You buy and you put up a big billboard, right?
You sell roof space for a billboard. I don't know. I can't imagine.
It's crazy, right?
But I'm shocked by the story only because you always hear these stories about, the eminent domain with China. If they want to put in high-speed rail, they've always been able to do it far more easier than us in the U.S. who, although we have limited domain, we're so litigious and it's difficult to try to put in highways and things. But the Chinese usually just go full steam ahead. So I'm a little surprised that they even put up with it.
And they accommodated him. And $350,000 over there, I think that would have bought him a pretty decent place, right?
I don't know, but it would have been better than what he's living in. So they told him, right?
Agreed.
You can't fight City Hall, John.
Nope, you lose.
So my story is a simple one, and I was surprised. You may know this. This was news to me, which is why I picked it. The headline is, U.S. citizen denied entry into Poland after security staff objects to handwritten notes in her passport. So this was earlier this month. A U.S. citizen was blocked from entering Poland because her passport was defaced with handwritten notes, border officials said. The unidentified passenger arrived outside of Krakow Airport, and border security into Poland would not allow her in. She was stopped at passport control because her passport contained handwritten notes of locations and airport names under her visa stamps from the country she had visited. So if she had gone to Berlin or whatever, she would write the name of the airport and the address. So they said that she told border security that she was unaware that she was not permitted to write on her passport or any ID documents. And so they kept her. They detained her. She remained at the airport until she could get a flight back to London. And then they said, as a general rule, this is the rules for passports, I guess. They said, as a general rule, it is not permissible for the holder to write in a passport other than to provide a required signature in an emergency contact. Airlines and immigration officials will deny boarding or entry if they feel a passenger has damaged or defaced the document or the passport. It was not clear why border officials elsewhere had not questioned her about her passport, because she's been traveling around, but it wasn't until she went to Poland recently that they stopped her.
So is it a federal regulation?
Apparently it's global. Or that you're not allowed to write on your passport, or it says official documentation or ID. And
so the only people that could alter the passport are the people that stamp you on your way in and out through customs, et cetera, right?
I guess, or it's just the stamp you get. You know, there is, I looked at my passport, you obviously sign it or whatever, and there is an emergency contact. But so where she got her stamp, so say she was in London Heathrow, she would write the address maybe. Now, I wouldn't think there'd be anything wrong with that since she was already there. And then on the other hand, I'm thinking, right, and then I'm thinking, well, why was she writing that there anyway? But so then I did a search, and apparently there's all kinds of stories about people that had been detained or have not been able to get in countries. It depends on who you get, whether they let you in or not. But can you imagine? She traveled all the way from, she went from London to Poland. They didn't let her in. And so I guess you got to get a new passport then if she's written on it. You can't really see there, but that was her passport
When you sent this over, I actually Googled and I saw a better picture of it where it showed some handwriting. And I just thought, my God, what's the big deal? But I guess...
Yeah.
There must be a reason why, right? There has to be a reason why they're basically saying you can't write in your passport.
Yeah, I don't know. It says, as a general rule, it is not permissible for the holder to write in a passport other than to provide a required signature and emergency contact. Airlines and immigration officials will often deny boarding or entry if they feel this passport has been damaged or defaced.
So when I went to Girona... back in
my Girona,
I think it was 2023 when I did my trip in October. It was a brand new passport, and when I arrived in Spain, I hand it over, and guy smiles, welcome, whatever. Then he just slides it back, and he taps the passport and hands me a pen. And he goes, "You got to sign this." I totally forgot to sign the passport, and I said, "Thank you. I am who I am." He goes, "Yeah, I know. Just sign it." So I don't know.
And then when Bob and I went to check mine, I have a new one too, and I just with no stamp.
Make sure you sign it. When we were in Iceland, we flew out on my birthday, like at 11 at night, landed, and the guy, very stern, does the thing, slides it through, and he's like, "Welcome." And he goes, "By the way," he goes, "Happy birthday." All right, friends, we're going to take a quick break here. When we return, we have a Shop Talk, one of our signature pieces, and as Tim, talked about at the beginning of the show, we have an article in our Shop Talk segment. You called it the Doordom?
Doordom, yeah.
D-O-O-R-D-U-M.
D-O-M.
And it D-O-M. Is a, Doordom. Here's another word from the focus group, a portmanteau, a made-up word. We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com. Now, back to the focus group with Tim and John. Available pretty much everywhere.
Hey, welcome back to the focus group. Tim Bennett here with John Nash. We learned a new word on the way out, a poor man's toe. Is that what it was? A poor man?
Portmanteau.
A portmanteau. Could be a good drag name, maybe.
That's like when I think I was at the gym one day and a friend of mine was looking at one of the back machines and it tells you what muscles it was working. And I think one of them said it was the latissimus dorsi for the back. And a friend of mine goes, "That's a great drag name, Miss Latissimus dorsi. And of course, it was Miss Satellite Dish at Wigstock one year.
I love those. I love when the drag queens pick those sort of names that were fun and campy, which now they're doing things like Alaska Thunderfuck, which I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Well, you know what it means, and it's not that funny. It's not as funny as, you know, Latissimus dorsi or Miss Portmanteau.
Or 2 liter Pepsi.
Two liter Pepsi.
Which I always love. So without further ado, our business birthday this week.
Everyone does celebrity birthday greetings, but the Focus Group is the only show in the universe that celebrates business birthdays.
So this is a simple one. Born January 29th in 1927. He died in 2004 at 77. Is Canadian and American chemical engineer and inventor Louis Urey. He invented the alkaline battery. Also the lithium battery.
Wow.
While he was working for EverReady Battery Company. He was born in Ontario. He graduated with a degree in chemical engineering from the University of Toronto. And he had spent some time serving in the Canadian military. before he went to work for Ever Ready Battery, a few months after he got out of the military, he ended up marrying a woman named Beverly Ann, and they had five children. As he was working in Canada for Ever Ready, they dispatched him to the company's laboratory down in the States, down in Parma, Ohio, because they were trying to figure out ways to extend the lifespan of zinc carbon batteries. So they said the low longevity of these batteries had been seriously damaging sales. And so Yuri realized that by developing a new battery that would be more cost effective, it would be less money than trying to figure out how to fix these old batteries that people had been used to. And so really the magic of it all was he ended up using powdered zinc. Before then, batteries were not used through powdered zinc. He said that nobody was able to develop a long-running battery because of the high cost of production. So he tested a number of materials. He discovered that manganese dioxide and solid zinc worked well, but it still didn't last as long as it should have. Didn't provide enough power. It was somewhat weak. And that's when he went from solid zinc to powdered zinc, and that really changed the whole world, quite frankly. You know, they said 80% of the batteries are still made the same way that he discovered back in the 50s. So he got a patent for it. Although EverReady wasn't totally sure and totally sold on the idea to start marketing these. So what he ended up doing is he put one of the batteries in a toy car in the cafeteria. And
gets attention.
Right. And also put a battery in another toy car of the older battery. So he had the new battery that he invented and patented in this old battery. And they ran him around the canteen, they said, or the cafeteria. Everybody was watching, paying attention, and realized that this new battery lasted 40 times longer than batteries prior to his invention of this alkaline battery. So, of course, lo and behold, now we have what we know as batteries. They said in 1999, he gave his first prototype battery to the Smithsonian Institute, and it's now displayed in the same room as the Edison light bulb.
Wow. Wow.
He said an estimated 80% of the dry cell batteries in the world today are based upon his work. He ended up having 51 patents that were battery related. EverReady changed its name to Energizer. And even recently, they said they still refer to Louis Urey as the father of the alkaline battery. They said his son said upon his death that his dad took special pride around Christmas when there was always a huge rush for batteries.
And, you bet.
Right. Everybody's looking for a battery at Christmas. But so and it was funny on his gravestone. It has his name and it just says inventor of the battery, alkaline battery.
How perfect is that, right?
Yeah. So good for him. He changed the world and changed the world for the better. And I always love these sort of folks and sort of stories because it's, you know, that's not what he was trying to solve a problem and ended up doing so and making history. So.
And Tim, this is another business birthday where the invention is enormous.
Yes.
But he made it while working for a company.
Right.
So he gets the credit and he can have a patent, but who's going to profit the most from this, right?
Well, I always, yes, you're exactly
you and I
right.
I wonder about this.
And I always try to look at whether these companies took care of these folks. You see it with DuPont all the time. Yep. Somebody invented styrofoam or nylon or Play-Doh, whatever it was. And you hope that they've been taken care of, right? You know, I tried to look at his net worth. They said that he was well taken care of by the company. I don't know what that means. I do know even at my time at Subaru, I was shocked that the employee in product planning who came up with the idea of the Outback, which saved the company. This is a $7.9 billion company. He comes up with this product that essentially saved the company from going out of business. And I think he might have got $3,000, right? Bonus. I mean, you know, the guy should be getting not even that. But, you know, I thought if I were in charge, he should get a free car every year, right? A new car every year.
Company car.
Yeah, how change it in yeah. for their, his lifetime. He and his family, immediate family, or whatever. But to thank him, I mean, the gesture of that would be big to him. But the fact that he, you know, developed this product and it, you know, is still, you know, the kind of the kingpin of the brand. Very little people get rewarded, I think, what they should for some of these inventions or some of these patents. And I don't even know if they collect any royalty. I remember talking to a friend she's the great-great-granddaughter of the guy who invented the windshield wiper or something. I think the family still gets a penny for every windshield wiper that gets sold. But, he made a deal with a royalty deal. But, you know, if you made a royalty deal on batteries, can you imagine?
Oh, my God.
You know, if you said, I'll take a penny a battery.
Think about just a penny a battery would be a massive fortune, right?
Yeah. So, but...
Wow. Good business Lewis birthday.
Uri, yeah. Happy birthday to Lewis Urey, Canadian-American inventor of the alkaline battery.
And
the lithium battery. And 51 other patents, which they didn't really go into, so I'm sure he's well-versed. We talked in the beginning of the show, and then we've been joking about this doordom that we led the show off with as a tease. And this was an article John found, I believe, out of Fast Company or Fortune.
Fast Company.
Yeah. Fast Company. And it says, the headline says, this one trick helped me turn winter from the season of blah into the season of aha. Creating doordom, my new midwinter holiday, got me out of the doldrums and created new sources of inspiration. So this author here, Francine Marakian, I think is how I would say it, or Marokian, wrote this story about going through the doldrums of the holiday. And she took two words. What did you call it, John? An apportmanteau.
A portmanteau.
So she took and developed doordom by taking boredom and the doldrums. And so doldrums and boredom and came up with doordom. And I thought to myself, before we get into the story, I thought, I love Christmas music and the decorations and everything going on. And then December 26th, I'm ready for spring, right? I don't... Right, Christmas music on the 24th and the beautiful decorations and the wreaths and the trees doesn't feel the same on the 26th.
Correct. I know.
There's a difference there. So some people will do gym and some people do New Year's resolutions, or cold climate people may head south as snowbirds or something. But this woman came up with her own ideas about how she was going to tackle these winter blahs, and that's how she came up with doordom. So what did you think of... of her idea?
Oh, I loved her idea. And I guess quite by accident, I'm putting it into play this year, because I approached this season, especially around the holidays, very differently. So when I talk about like indoor training on my bike, in order to get to do that correctly, you have to do something called an FTP test. It means functional threshold power. And for the last several years, my number has been at a certain point. I took the test. It was an off day, I'll admit. And the number was at least 15 or 20 points lower than the previous few years. And I just immediately went into like, uh-oh, I got to get fit. And that's what made me think
that's
about
it. No brownies.
Well, no, they're allowed, along with lemon squares too. But I immediately went into this mode of like, what should I do? What can I do? And what do I want to do? And that's why I started to do the rollers on the back porch a little more. Some days, if I'm working at my desk for the whole day, I'll purposely get up and do an hour long walk. It's great for you. I've also decided that, and before I read this article, that moving into 2025, I was going to read physical books from now on.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I, by the way, it's a smart decision. And I use our local library. I love the library. You know, I could request a book. It appears there like a week later because they move them around. I check it out. I have it for 3 weeks, return it after two and a half, depending on how long the book is, move on to my next one. And it's just those little, I think that's the point of her whole art, this her thing about approaching January, February, and possibly March. Get shows that you want to watch in order. She also talks about the fact that, you know, this is a big time for her to do decluttering. And why not? You're indoors. Right. So like, this is one of those seasons where you go to your closet, you open the door, and you're like, okay, I'm just going to spend an hour getting rid of stuff I don't wear anymore. And you don't want to do that in August because you want to be outside, right?
Right. And as a sidebar to the library book thing, do you find you have to read the books quicker than you normally would because of the time constraint of saying,
yes,
I've got to return
it? Uh-huh. So if it's electronic, it's there forever. I can pick it up whenever I want. But this has forced me to get into books faster. So I will get to the first, second, or third chapter much quicker And then I moved through. I just finished a right. book, a sci-fi book that I picked up through the day. And yeah, I'm enjoying this aspect because I still love having a physical book. But, you know, the phone makes everything so... It's always in your hand, right? You can download yeah. something, watch it. But now when the only downside of reading a physical book for me is when I bring a book with me and I'm commuting, I have to bring my reading glasses. So that's another level, right? You got to bring your reading glasses, right. but I don't.
And then it's the bulk of what do you do with it if you go somewhere? I guess you just put it on the table.
Yeah.
Okay.
We used to do this back in the day, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. So her idea of doldrum, as John mentioned, the cluttering, she says, well, if you take down the Christmas decorations or your holiday decorations, she says she sets up some white lights, lanterns, forest motifs, flickering flame, birch log, candles. It's funny because I laughed because Richard, we took down all the Christmas stuff, but he left some pine cones with candles around, mm-hmm. which is kind of the winter thing. And we live in an area called the Pines. So I guess it's apropos. The other thing I thought was interesting, which I clicked on, I'm not sure I would do this, but maybe you would have it on in the background. She went to this website that was on YouTube, and it was it's called Street Style Stockholm. Yeah. Did you click on it?
Yes.
So there's all kinds of videos of people walking around in the snow and kind of fashionable outfits, music, whatever. But so you just kind of watch that, or she has that channel on of people walking around. She says, as much as sometimes people don't like their winter clothing and or just have it being more functional, this is some ideas of more stylish clothing and also a little more brighter colors, which reminds me of every time I would go to New York, the city of New York, go see agencies. It was Holly and John and Rob. It was always, what are we wearing? What are you wearing? Because that was the
I could
time between you would wear business casual or you'd wear suits or whatever. And it was always Holly saying, go to New York wearing black. You know, she and John, go to New York wearing black. It was always, you know, black turtleneck, black pair of pants. And so I always laughed about New York City. I think one time you and I were in the subway and I had on some kind of crazy colored coat, but the whole subway car, you included, was in black. And I was like, look at me. I'm the clown from out of town.
Well, nobody pointed, some sort of, you better believe
some
it.
Sort of white jacket with, you know, stripes on her. It's like, you're from out of town. You're not a New Yorker with a white jacket.
No one was rude enough to say anything. They just
the clown from out of town.
They clocked it. There is something she says in here that Bob and I learned when we were in Iceland back at the end of September, early October. She said that there's a Swedish proverb called, there is no such thing as bad weather, there is only bad clothing. And I'll tell you, there's truth in this. So the people that live in the Nordic regions, they go out every day. It could be raining and snowing, and they have the proper attire for it. They're warm, they're dry, and they enjoy being outside in any weather, which is different from us. So I think that's another thing that you could kind of wrap your head around in this season is like, I want to get outside. And if you get outside with the right clothing, you can actually enjoy it. I mean, all you have to do is look at kids, right? There's a playground across the street attached to a local school. And the only time the kids don't come out and play is when it was like 9 degrees or something really cold. Every other time they're out there running around with the coats on. Sometimes they take the coat and you're like, okay, it's 39 degrees. It's, you know, I like the whole thing about being outside. What else did she say here though? Obviously she watches a lot of BritBox and then she watches a couple other things too. And then there's this funny thing that she says towards the end of the article. She goes, dry January? No thanks.
I laughed about that, too.
I did, too. I mentioned it to Bob, and Bob goes, there's nothing dry about my January. So, yeah, I think it was a fun little
piece. About dry January, she says, I don't want to make this time of year any harder than nature already does. But she says she might go to sit in a cafe and order a great, you know, a great dish of stew or soup or something, and then also some whipped cream on a hot chocolate with maybe a shot of Bailey's or something like that, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, no, I thought this was cool. I liked the aspect of it. As I said, here an awful lot of people leave and they go south.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have talked about doing that. Do we go to Palm Springs, or we know a lot of people who go to Puerto Vallarta or go to Florida. I haven't done it. I think you've probably done it more than me, but I don't know. Would you ever consider just saying when you finally retire that you would say, we're going to leave at New Year's and not come back until April 1st.
Oh, we have friends that live in the building that recently retired, and they are snowbirds now. They're down in Florida.
So when do they leave usually?
Right after Thanksgiving, and they plan on being back full time sometime in April.
Wow. And they go to Florida or
they've lived in the city most of their adult lives, and they are renting a place down there. They're thinking of buying it. For Bob and I, we're clearly not winter, you know, we're not flying south because we have a house in upstate New York. And I'll tell you, yeah, it's cold and it's not the summer, but it has its pleasures. I mean, like, yes.
Not having a lot of people around.
Yeah. So the day of the inauguration, like I think it was inauguration, Martin Luther King Day. That night we had about 6 or 8 inches of snow upstate, and I went out to shovel, which I actually enjoy shoveling. And we have a gravel driveway, so I have to shovel the driveway. It was that powdery stuff that you would die if you were skiing. You want that. And it was, you know how after snow it's silent? The only thing you hear is a truck going by or something, and you hear the pine needles and everything. It was, you know, like I'm standing there shoveling and I take a break and I'm like, what? This is amazing. I'm having a great time. I love it. Yeah, I'd love to get out on my bike and go for a ride without the bike getting filthy or without freezing. But I think I'm making do this year. And I think that her article hit me because of my mindset at the end of the holidays was, what's the best way to get? Because January could be long.
Yes.
But here we are at the end, right?
Yeah, no, very much so. So it's, I thought it was a good article, and I'm glad you found it. So I wanted to say one thing before we leave, because people often ask, and I didn't post it on our focus group page, but my little dog Spike passed away as you know. He was 23 years and just shy of 7 months old. He would have been 24 June 1st. But he had a good run, and he had, as you said, a far outsized footprint.
For his size, he had a little big guy. Footprint, yeah.
And so I'm still trying to get used to, I actually just thought I heard him behind me somewhere, but I'm trying to get used to the routine that happens when you have a pet. And but I know a lot of people used to ask about him on the show. And so while I posted it on my personal page of Facebook, just for our focus group listeners, just to know that little Spikey is gone, but certainly not forgotten.
Oh, not at all. And I have to say, Tim sent me two pictures a couple days after Spike passed. And he and Richard had gone to pick up Spike's remains from, I guess, the mortuary?
Crematorium. Yeah.
Crematorium?
Yeah.
They made a little, I guess it's an ornament, maybe? Is that what it's?
The paw print they put in.
They took his paw and they put a print in a plaster thing, and they wrote the name Spike underneath it, and they attached a little bottle, a little glass bottle of his fur, which I thought was, I showed it to a couple friends, and they got all like verklempt and teary. They're like, oh my God. I said, no, this is a, I said, believe me, Tim is, they're sad, but they're also happy. And Tim and I talked about this a lot when Spike passed, because when our cats passed, I was wrecked for like maybe a couple hours. And then I just had this feeling come over me of like, wow, I am so lucky that I had this amazing pet that every time I think of this animal, it just makes me smile.
Just make you smile. That's the best thing they can do, right? It's the best gift of all.
Yeah. I mean, you do process the loss of having them around, but if they make you smile, like think about people in your life that can actually do that. Like pets consistently, like, oh my God, I'm thinking a little Spiky now, the nails on. Well, everybody's sorry for the loss of the, and didn't your neighbor across the street say that he actually won the election for you?
Yes, they all said that. He won the election for me. I actually had people call looking
for my dad.
Right. You know, Brian had made this election signs with Spike on them that said, vote for my dad. And I actually had a couple of people call and ask if they could have copies because their kids, little kids wanted them. And actually one guy said, I don't know you, but I'm voting for you because my kids love your dog. Look. Because they sent out a card that just, you know, everybody was sending out their kids and whatever, and mine was Spike because I didn't vote for my dad.
So, brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. And so there we go. All right. Well, we are very sorry about the loss of Spike, no doubt.
Thank you. I just wanted to let people know because always ask about him.
So. You guys were so, 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 so good. All right, folks, we're going to wrap it up there. We want to thank you for joining us here on the Focus Group. We want to thank our partner in crime here, although it's not really a crime. because what they're providing for you is great material. And that would be deep discount. You can get to their site by going to rsfocusgroupradio.com and click on the deep discount logo. We'll be visiting with them again next week. And in the meantime, Tim and I see this on the road all the time. We want to urge you folks to don't text and drive. Please arrive alive. We want you safe for next week's focus group, when we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash. Accessible on all platforms. Subscribe, like, and rate us on your platform of choice. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com.
That was a stunning focus group.